Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Hey, are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Matthew Cohn is a business professional and musician from Los Angeles, California. Our personal history begins in the early 2000s when we were connected through mutual friends. At the time, Matt shared very little of his experiences of abuse in the troubled teen industry. In fact, it wasn't until he watched the 2024 Netflix documentary, The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping, that he truly came to terms with all of the horrors he had seen and faced. Admittedly, it was a validating, eye-opening experience for him to watch. The Broken Cycle Media team is extremely grateful for his candidness today, as well as all of his efforts he's making to change the troubled teen industry.
Hi, I'm Matt Cohn. I'm a 37-year-old stockbroker and bass guitarist living in Los Angeles. I am also a survivor of the troubled teen industry,
also known as the TTI,
and institutional child abuse.
I was adopted,
grew up in a middle-class home, a clever kid, always loved school, huge bookworm my entire life, really liked music. I used to annoy the carpool because they wanted to listen to the top 40 hits, and I wanted to listen to the oldie station so that I could hear the Motown. Kind of a odd duck, but harmless. Just a sweet kid being raised in middle class California. My adopted father was an attorney. My adopted mother stayed at home. We did not see eye to eye. I never felt I had that with my parents. It turns out I'm half Mexican. My parents were not. So from a young age, there was just this behavioral, psychological, cultural distinction between my parents and I. I don't think we ever felt that we saw eye to eye. Things came to a head when I was about 13. We were fighting constantly. I really started struggling with my parents, and it ended up bleeding into my middle school. It was always behavioral. School was always really easy for me, but I was taking out my parental issues on any authority figure. I started getting in more trouble, started talking back more. There was this friend group drama. Somehow or another, my friend group got divided. There was me on one side and friends on this other, and everybody was quite venomous, as middle schoolers might be. I ended up getting in trouble. I'd been butting heads with the administration. They ended up determining that I should get booted from the school. And that was catastrophic to me. That school was the social center that I'd grown up in. It just derailed me. I ended up at a continuation school, got kicked out of there because I was reeling from the loss of my friends. At some point, I ran away from home, was arrested, and sent to juvenile hall. I went to two different juvenile halls. At Central Juvenile Hall in Los Angeles, I actually met a classmate of mine from middle school. Poor guy was crying inconsolably. I was doing my best to put on a good face, but these are just miserable places, and I couldn't wait to get out. What was shocking to me at the time was that nobody understood that I hadn't done anything. Nobody would speak up for me. Everybody seemed to be making excuses. There was no advocate in my corner, just a bunch of people talking in whispers. I must have only been in juvenile hall for maybe a month or so. While I was there, the school district and my adopted parents, the powers that be, were conspiring to have me sent to one of these residential treatment centers. Residential treatment centers or behavioral modification programs are for-profit machines that take in teenagers generally, but other disadvantaged people, developmentally disabled people, and they house them in a ostensibly therapeutic environment. There are a number of places where institutional abuse can occur. It can occur in an inpatient mental health hospital. It can occur in a boarding school in New England. But my experience specifically is with the troubled teen industry, which are for-profit behavioral modification programs that oftentimes cater to parents, but they also work to generate contracts with school districts, contracts with counties. They offer rehabilitation at a huge price tag, greater than that of a four-year college in many instances. But in reality, what they provide is much less. That, I think, is the fatal flaw with these programs. It is a billion-dollar industry in the state of Utah. For whatever reason, the state laws are particularly amenable to children's behavioral health facilities. They provide a very lax standard that allows all sorts of evils to be gotten away with. I suppose that one state had to be the most amenable to these kinds of practices, and it had to be Utah. I was about 14. I showed up at Cedar Ridge Academy in Roosevelt, Utah. I started at Cedar Ridge about 2001, and I knew nothing about it. I was told that I'd be going to a school in Utah and that they had karate. And I said, okay, I like karate. I'm 14 years old. That sounds cool. And I show up. It's in the middle of the Utah desert. There's nothing there. There's a couple scraggly cedar trees, some shrubs, and these bizarre geodesic domes that I later discover had been built by the other kids there. I'm taken on a tour of the facility. There is a little lake, some animals. All things considered, it almost seems okay, but there's this weight that you can feel, this tension in the air between people, between the staff, everybody holding their breath. And I get my first taste of it. My very first morning, I wake up, I go to breakfast, and they give me a plate with a bunch of stuff. I don't like yogurt, so I say, no, thank you. I'll just have some more oatmeal. And they say, no, you have to eat your yogurt. And I said, but I don't like yogurt. And they continue to force it until I'm told that I need to go push the log. I have no idea what to make of any of this. I've been pulled from my home, pulled from my friends, pulled from my family. I've been in juvenile hall for no good reason. I'm sent out to the log. And the log is this massive log, like barely look over it. Had to have been hundreds of pounds.
And I just had to push this log indefinitely. It almost broke me. This log was a terrible experience. You are out there for hours. Your hands are bleeding. You'll have some staff member who's supposed to be there to watch you, to keep you from running away or doing anything. And he's just mocking you for your inability to push the log. And it just slowly starts to break you. I went back in after pushing the log for hours. I was exhausted. I was filthy. I woke up the next morning and they served me yogurt again. I told them again that I didn't want to eat it. And for this second infraction, I ended up in the compost pits. Now, this was profound torture. It was starting to get cold in the desert of Utah. I was out in the compost pits in an orange jumpsuit, no shoes, no gloves, and I had to shovel for everything. With each shovel full, I'd have to hold it up and respectfully ask for the shovel full to be inspected by the staff who was watching it. And they could screw with you all day long, but if it was satisfactory, then you would throw that shovel full in the compost pile that they wanted it in, and then you would do it again. And with 50 shovelfuls, you would get 1 point. With something like 200 shovelfuls, I could earn a cold shower, or for more points, a hot shower after a long day of shoveling compost. I could earn food. I could earn the right to sleep inside as opposed to sleeping in the compost. And this would be my life for months. As long as I was at Cedar Ridge, I was shoveling compost day in, day out. When I got the few rare opportunities to sleep inside, I didn't get to sleep on a bed. I was sleeping on this cold linoleum floor of this geodesic dome built by children in the Utah desert. None of it felt right to me. The only thing that made it easier at Cedar Ridge was I couldn't fathom that I'd done anything to be treated this way. But it's hard to believe that you don't deserve to be there. And if you run away and you're wearing this orange jumpsuit, you just know that the neighbors are going to call the cops because you're wearing the orange jumpsuit. You're clearly the problem. And then you'll just be right back to where you started. The power of these places is that they convince everyone that we are just bad news. The word goes out through the town that we are the worst of the worst, and everything is done to reinforce this mentality. I'm there for effectively running away from home while having a hard time. Somebody could have gotten me a dog and a lollipop, and instead, I'm in this place where for months I'm shoveling compost, and I'm being told that I'm the problem. I've let everyone down in my life. When you have adults telling you this as a 14-year-old child, it's really hard to not believe it. So I started at Cedar Ridge. Things came to a head there after I'd been there for a few months. I climbed on top of the isolation dome in protest. I sat on top and refused to come down. So I ended up being pulled from that program in Roosevelt, Utah, and driven about 2.5 hours west to Youth Care of Utah. And this was an interesting experience because it was totally different and yet just as destructive. Youth Care of Utah, when I was there, was a single family home modified to hold maybe 16 kids. It had a classroom, little kitchen, little dining area, a living room, and then it had bedrooms built around the living room. Each bedroom had 2 beds. I was in that house for about a year. If I tried to leave, they would have tackled me, beaten me to the ground, put me in a padded gray room that smelled like piss, and shot me full of very hardcore sedative called Thorazine. And that was my life for a year, just unable to leave this house, no real school, no real entertainment. You disappear from reality. It's another planet. The pop culture references and events while you are in this place will be totally foreign to you until you get out. And that's one of the strangest things. There's this bizarre time capsule kind of sense where you get out and you have years of music and film and current events that nobody's clued you in on because you've just been warehoused.
Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
I was at youth care for a year. That place was terrible. I had a therapist who read my journal to a group therapy session. Nobody seemed to realize that what they were trying with me was not working and was not going to work. Everybody just kept saying, oh, he's such a bad kid, when I was simply unwilling to operate in this draconian environment where everything was so heavily policed. I spent a lot of time in what they called the QR, the isolation room. Smelled like pee. I had my only kiss in high school there. When I was cleaning it, a girl walked in, walked right up to me, kissed me on the lips, and walked out. It's the only kiss I had in high school. In all of these places, sexuality is incredibly repressed. One of the things that they purport to treat is victims of sexual abuse or sexual trauma, but the way that they go about doing that is by isolating boys from girls and by throwing a wet blanket on even the most minimal expressions of human intimacy. So you go years really not being able to get hugs, not being able to look a girl in the eyes. If you're gay, there are whole programs that are designed to deal with homosexuality. Obviously not supporting that, just commenting on how horrific all of it is. We were not allowed to know one another's last names so that we couldn't find one another once we got out. They don't want you communicating. They want to make your relationships as destructive as possible. I was at youth care for a year, and then I leave to Westminster, Colorado, where I would spend the remaining time until I turned 18 at a place called Devereaux Cleo Wallace. And that was different from the two previous. It was much more corporate. The restraints there were absolutely brutal. Restraints refer to the physical manipulation of a child by maybe 3 or 4 adults, slamming the child to the ground and then holding the child there prone as a means of punishment until the child can be effectively or safely moved to an isolation room. You form these intense emotional relationships with these adult staff members who one minute they're providing for you, almost like a big brother or a big sister. And then the next minute, they're throwing you violently to the ground because you tried to take a second Danish. That's not even an out-of-this-world example. There was a kid at Devereaux Cleo Wallace whose therapist mandated in his treatment plan that if he took more food than he was given, he should be physically restrained. When I was at Cleo Wallace, I was restrained for talking when I wasn't supposed to be talking or talking back, anything that rubbed the staff there the wrong way. I was at Devereaux Cleo Wallace about 2.5 years. The food was terrible. That's the place where I think I just totally lost hope. While I was at Cleo Wallace, 2 kids ran away and then came back with a 2x4 and a broken bottle, and they attacked the staff. One poor guy got hit in the head, the other got stabbed. I was horrified. Couldn't imagine being that violent. But my point is, if you have kids like that and you stick them in a residential facility with somebody who really has no business being there, maybe they drank a Mike's Hard Lemonade at a prestigious private school and they got kicked out for it. And the parents freaking out thinking this Mike's Hard Lemonade is a slippery slope of drugs and violence. The problem is it's all subjective. This is how these places operate. Even the therapists are in on it. Everybody plays the script that they are given. If a child is put to the ground, that child was taking another Danish. The therapist said that he can't take another Danish. I've got to do this. If the child's put to the ground, that child was looking out the window and then started talking back. There's no telling where this could escalate to. The problem is that they are misconstruing compliance and obedience with emotional growth. They're not the same thing. And these places try and strong arm compliance and obedience with tactics like physical restraints and medication, and they don't do anything for the emotional growth. They are incredibly emotionally detrimental. That is the crux of the whole issue. To move past this, you have to realize that you were involved in a system that tried to beat you senselessly into submission. If you submitted, it breaks you one way. If you fought them, it breaks you another. None of it's good. Brainwashing, that's what it is. Your parents are telling you that you need to be in this program. The school district tells you you need to be in this program. The courts tell you you need to be in this program. You get to the program and the program tells you that you're a piece of crap. The program tells you that you deserve what you get, that your parents don't want you. The program tells you that when you get slammed to the ground by these 22-year-old staffers, that you deserved it because you were looking out the window. These places typically pay the staff bottom dollar. So any real therapeutic benefit is lessened because the vast majority of the time, the authority figures of these programs are not being paid well. The majority of the face time is with 22-year-olds straight out of college who are being paid $10 an hour to watch a bunch of supposedly emotionally damaged children. They still exist. They've existed for a very long time. The first ones that emerged came from the Synanon cult, which came from the 70s. These places have been around for decades. Maybe the most famous one is Provo Canyon School, because Paris Hilton went there. We've got a number of celebrities that make their way through the news for their antics in their 20s, and then it turns out that when they were teenagers, they went to these programs. Chet Hanks is another one that I saw recently. Famously, some of the worst places aren't even in this country. Casa by the Sea and High Impact were both run out of Mexico. Atlantis Leadership Academy was in Jamaica. Wilderness camps are bad news. They starve children. They get beaten. They go without adequate protection from the elements. There are just horrendous stories that come out of the wilderness programs. A lot of the wilderness programs have shut down in recent years. But a lot of the children who don't go to the wilderness programs now just get sent to residential programs. Children die in these places all the time. They die during restraints. They die from hunger. They die from exposure. They die from sickness. I need to be emphatic with this. In the almost 4 years that I was in these programs, I did not go to school. I turned 18 with an eighth grade education. I remember having a conversation with my roommate shortly before I turned 18 about how it had been years since I'd seen the stars. I get out June 2004. I turn 18 and I age out. I'm unceremoniously dumped on a plane back to Los Angeles. There are no resources to get me caught up to speed. It's just, well, here you go, kid. You're 18 now. See ya. I get back in LA. I spend my time bouncing between my adopted parents' place and friends' houses. I go to a local continuation school to get a hold on my education. My life is in utter chaos. It's starting to sink in how uneducated I've been, but I'm free. So there's a part of me that is very happy. It's a very conflicting time. There's a part of me that is thrilled to be out in the sunshine. And then there is this terrible anxiety and this real inability to understand what I need to do or to understand how I need to act. It's hard to be set this far back in a world where everybody else is kind of on this track. There's a deep sense of shame because everybody else has had all these pivotal high school experiences and they've grown together. Some people have learned how to play instruments. Other people have discovered that they love to perform in plays. Other people are painters. And I have just left a warehouse for children where for years I've just been heavily medicated and getting slammed to the ground for looking at girls. So I'm in a radically different place from all my peers. I would say that first year, especially, probably defined by my first attempts to reach out socially and to get an education. I can't even say really that I realized how much I'd lost, but there was the beginning of this anxious, something was really taken from me that would continue to grow for years to come. To try and keep head to head with people who have not spent 3 years in a black hole, it's like running a decathlon. Every day, you have to wake up and you have to be prepared to embarrass yourself by saying the wrong thing to the wrong person or to not know this musical reference, to have to learn that much more to make up for the fact that you didn't learn anything in high school. These experiences derail your life. It sets you on a different track. You met me literally that year. You met me the year I aged out. I was 18, but I wasn't in college yet. I was not going to CSUN, but for whatever reason, I was rushing ZBT. That's the sort of benefits of my weird life. When you get shunted off the regular tracks, you feel much more comfortable taking chances and doing weird shit. So rushing a fraternity, which that experience was so bad because I put so much energy into that. It's my first year out. I'm trying to go for social stuff. And then they give me the boot because I don't really go to CSUN, I have to start all over again. I was surrounded by people who were going off to college. And I thought to myself, I don't know how to do anything anymore, but I better learn it pretty quick. I didn't want to be left behind. It was very difficult to navigate socially. I think I came across as just a wild man. I was thrilled to be out on my own, thrilled to have the opportunity to just learn and soak things in, thrilled to see the stars.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I was touring these three programs for the first time in 22 years. I went back to Devereaux Cleo Wallace with a former staff who had been there when I was there. I asked him at one point what he remembered of me, and he thought about it for a minute, said, my laughter. And I just think, a teenager who people remember as laughter, what was a kid like that ever doing in a place like this?
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.